Grass is fine if you've got a cut or 4 feet and stand in the mud, but we've got 2 and teeth to chew. Don't give us none of that vegetarian stew. We're carnivores and we ain't ashamed. The reason's simple, it's in the refrain. We feed you.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 25 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling The Other Weatherman, about my conversation with Jeremy Wolf, meteorologist in charge of the National Weather Service office the day I interviewed him, Saturday, June 3rd, 2017. I'm being precise about the date because as I put this podcast together 6 days later, the Weather Service had predicted might occur, has, and it looks like cool air with the possibility of rain is here to stay a few days, giving stressed wheat plants and farmers a respite. Although wheat is an incredible plant, it's like many of us. Allowed the opportunity to take it easy, it will. In wheat's case, the rainy spring has resulted in lazy root systems that haven't been forced to, well, root, resulting in an inability to sip the abundant moisture that exists deeper in the soil profile beneath them. I'm a bit ashamed to admit this next fact, but although I have interviewed dozens of real and so-called weather experts over the years, I have never made the short trip to the National Weather Service office located off Rambo Road in Airway Heights. Among an area of farms and ranchettes sits the trim single-story brick building, its purpose partly given away by the radar hidden beneath a giant white ball on stilts. The building is staffed by meteorologists 24 hours a day, 365 days a year, a schedule that means personnel work rotating shifts. As someone who once worked the graveyard shift from midnight to 8 a.m. for 6 months, I've got to imagine that's the worst part of a government meteorologist's job. Wolf, who graduated from the University of Washington with a degree in atmospheric science, came to the door when I buzzed and led me into the operations area where a couple of other meteorologists were working at computer screens. I asked him what went on in the room.
This is our operations area, so this is where we're monitoring all the satellite data, model data, and producing our forecasts out 7 days. So we have 3 different forecasters that are looking at the forecast, different parts of the forecast. We have lots of tools available. We have satellite radar to monitor what's going on right now and seeing where the weather systems are tracking. And then we have weather model data to utilize to forecast, you know, where things are going to track days into the future.
A few of you listening to this podcast probably understand the title, but a few of you probably don't. Art Douglas, a long-range weather forecaster who has been a feature at Spokane Farm Forum and the occasional Tri-State Wheat Convention, is frequently called the Weatherman. Much of what I've learned about the weather over the years is thanks to Douglas, and I'm sure many of you listening feel the same way. You can listen to an interview I did with Douglas after his Farm Forum presentation in episode 10 of Weed All About It, entitled The Elements. Anyhow, since Douglas is the weatherman, that makes Wolf the other weatherman. Get it? All of us have a story to tell about how we've gotten to where we are in life, and in addition to asking Wolf the weather questions we're all interested in, so hold your horses, I also wanted to understand what motivates a person to make weather his life's career.
I have loved the weather ever since I was a kid, and when I was in high school, I decided to pursue being a meteorologist as a career. And the Weather Service really intrigued me because that's where there's just a lot of forecasting that using the science part of it. I went to the University of Washington and went there for 4 years, got a bachelor's degree in atmospheric sciences. And then after I graduated from there, I started full-time with the Weather Service in Pendleton, Oregon. And then after Pendleton, I moved here to Spokane, and I've been here about 11 years.
Is there a location where meteorologists would like to be located? I mean, do you want a place with lots of weather?
I grew up in an area where it just was cloudy often and rained a lot, and we didn't get a lot of wide variety of weather. So really, I wanted to move somewhere where there was more variety, and Eastern Washington was just a great place because overall, I was not too far from home, but then we get more of a variety. We get more thunderstorms. We get more wide variety of winter weather, dust storms. So really, this is a great place to be in terms of getting a good variety of weather.
And where did you grow up?
I grew up near Portland.
Portland. My daughter lives there, and this winter has been especially tough. Lots of rain and even snow. All from the same weather pattern that has brought Eastern Washington an abundance of moisture. And we'll get to that in a moment. I think it's the rare individual who isn't fascinated by the weather. That's what makes it such a great conversation starter. But I'm a novice about understanding it compared to some farmers I know. But isn't that to be expected? There's nothing I can do about the weather. And besides, I work in an office. That's not the case for farmers, and it's something rank-and-file Americans often forget. Growing a crop as vast as wheat is not making widgets on a factory floor, or even growing in a greenhouse. Farmers truly are at the mercy of weather. They watch it, they worry about it, and if, with a National Weather Service forecast, they can peer 7 days into the future with it, well, that can dictate spraying, planting, and harvesting schedules, not to mention provide peace of mind, or lack thereof, to the farmer praying for rain. Although we all like to make fun of weather forecasts, and there can still be blunders, I think they have gotten much better since I was a young man. I asked Wolf whether my hunch could be backed up.
Weather forecasts are getting better, and if we look back to, say, the early 80s, we can now forecast out 5 days better than we could 3 days out back in 1980. So forecasts are definitely getting better. And in fact, we can almost forecast as good out 7 days now as we could just 3 days back in 1980.
And what has made the difference?
Better data getting into the weather models, and just, you know, tweaks to the weather models. You know, it's been an ongoing area of research, and as we get better and better at understanding the atmosphere, we can make the models better. There's been improvements in satellite imagery because we don't have a lot of weather data out over the oceans. There's not a lot of weather observations out there to be put into the weather models, but with the improvements of satellite data, it's helping to make the models better and then make the forecast better.
What happens after 7 days? Why does that certainty just cease to exist?
Well, as you get out beyond 7 days, you know, errors can become larger and larger in the forecast. What may be just a very minor error in the model, which doesn't tend to impact the day one forecast or the day two or day three, that small error as you go out in time can have a larger and larger effect, such that by the time you get beyond day seven, it introduces a larger error in the model and thus makes the forecast, you know, not as good as you get further out.
I was motivated to meet with Wolf because of the National Agricultural Statistics Service Crop Progress and Condition Report that I receive in an email each week through the growing season. Looking at the precipitation totals this year has been great fun. In my head, I create competitions among various communities based on their total precipitation, but also what percent above normal they are. For instance, in the June 5th report, Ritzville had 6.5 inches more of precipitation this time of year, or 156% of normal, while Lynn was 5.49 inches ahead in precipitation, but 163% of normal. Similar conditions exist over most of eastern Washington. Pasco has 150% of its normal precip for this time of year, Moses Lake 144%. Spokane 159% and Pullman 131% of normal. I asked Wolf what had happened to cause all the precipitation.
there's been two factors that have really contributed to how much precipitation we've had. There's been a very active jet stream that's been going through the entire Pacific Ocean from Indonesia all the way to the west coast of the United States. And that jet stream has brought in a frequent amount of storms into the region, bringing the precipitation. But also over the winter, we had a second factor, and that was there was strong high pressure that developed in the Northeast Pacific, which brought frequent bouts of colder air down from Alaska and Canada. And what that cold air does, often there's not as much precipitation associated with that. But what it does is when the colder air comes in, it acts as a dome of cold air. And then when we see precipitation coming from the west, warmer air, being that it's less dense, is forced to go up and over that cold air. And that just helps generate more lift and more precipitation. So seeing a lot of those bouts of colder air helps generate more precipitation when we get weather systems coming in off the ocean.
The two factors Wolf mentioned, an active jet stream and strong high pressure in the Northeast Pacific, generated the weather, but the ignition switch was Typhoon Songda, which developed far west of the Hawaiian Islands and wended its way northwestward, ending at the coastline of Vancouver Island. I'll let Wolf tell the rest.
It all began in October, and a lot of places in October had their wettest October on record. Spokane actually had its wettest month of all time in October, and we had the remnants of a typhoon, Typhoon Songda, that came up, got embedded within the jet stream and gave us quite a bit of precipitation. So this all started with the remnants of a typhoon that started this whole wet pattern.
It's interesting, you know, as I look back and I think about cold winters here in eastern Washington, I do not think that cold and precipitation are associated together. There have been some very cold winters that have very little precipitation.
Yeah, and like I said, this year we had those two jet streams, the one coming from the north and then the one coming across the Pacific that met often, giving us quite a bit of precipitation. But you're right, there's other winters where the cold northerly influence is more predominant and we don't see the moisture coming in and we're just colder and drier.
Typically, Wolf said the region gets two or three cold snaps a year. This season, there were seven or eight of them. Through the winter as a whole, December through February, many parts of the Columbia Basin finished among the top 10 coldest on record. On average, winter temperatures ranged from 24 to 27 degrees Fahrenheit during the winter season past, 5 to 7 degrees below normal. As I have listened to this podcast during the editing process, I marvel at the complexity of the planet's weather systems and remember details of all those Art Douglas weather tutorials. I ask Wolf to explain what made the jet stream so important to Northwest weather.
Well, the jet stream forms on temperature boundaries, and so you got the polar area that's very cold, and you got the area along the equator that's very warm. Well, there's a boundary that sets up in the mid-latitudes, which is where we live, where you get an area of enhanced winds and you get clouds and precipitation that form along that jet stream. And every winter, exactly where that sets up and how it's oriented and how many storms we see vary. And there's various factors that are involved that impact where that jet stream sets up.
Anyone who has gone to presentations by Douglas knows how seriously he takes sea surface temperatures in coming up with his long-range forecasts as it relates to El Niño's development or its absence. I ask Wolf his thoughts on El Niño's impact on Northwest weather.
Well, El Niño really has impacts across the globe. While it may not seem like the tropics would have a big influence on us, the thunderstorms that happen in the tropics have a ripple effect across the globe, and the thunderstorms that get generated have an impact on the jet stream and on our weather. So El Niño refers to ocean temperatures along the equatorial region in the central and eastern Pacific being warmer than normal. Well, that warmer water has an impact on the thunderstorms that get generated, which then has an impact on the jet stream and exactly where that tracks. The main thing I want to point out with El Nino or La Nina is that every year is different, and how that jet stream sets up is not the same every year, so we can never say concisely each winter what's going to happen, because each one is different.
Am I correct in saying that right now we are in that in-between phase, that neutral phase?
That's correct. We are in the neutral phase right now.
But it looks like that we are going toward another El Nino?
Right now it's about a 50-50 chance. The probabilities are not real high where we can say with confidence that we're heading into an El Nino. Right now it's a borderline weak El Nino that we're heading into, and whether it gets classified as one or not is too early to call at this point. But El Nino, most of the time we have below normal snowfall in the lower elevations due to the milder temperatures, and the mountains often see a bit below normal snowfall as well as the storm track goes to the south.
We all know about the rain shadow and about how the clouds coming over basically get wrung out over the Cascades, and then they come over to the dry land area of wheat growing and there's nothing left. Why this year did that rain shadow effect not work?
Well, part of the reason was those intrusions of colder air. Actually, when you have colder air in place in the eastern Washington, when you see weather systems come in off the ocean, you actually get added lift because of the cold air. So you actually get more precipitation east of the Cascades because of that added lift. But then that just general southwest flow, you tend to get, you don't get any type of westerly influence to provide that rain shadowing. The southwest flow, you don't get as much rain shadowing.
One interesting piece of information I have picked up in the precipitation data NASS puts out is that the only part of eastern Washington that isn't partaking in an abundance of moisture is Walla Walla. It has only 1.05 inch of precip more for this time of year, or 105% of normal. I have always known the Blue Mountains have a huge weather influence in the southeast part of the state, but Wolf said sometimes that influence can be thwarted.
As you get towards the Blue Mountains, when you get into the southwesterly flow, you do get some downslope influence off the Blue Mountains, which is why Walla Walla hasn't been as wet compared to the rest of the state in terms of how much above normal, because that, again, that southwest flow does provide some downsloping to that area.
As the preceding indicates, there's a lot of factors that go into making up a forecast. I asked Wolf whether he felt long-range forecasts had value.
I believe they have a little bit of value, but more than that, I don't believe so, because the atmosphere is very complex, and sea surface temperatures is just one part of the equation. There's other factors that affect the weather months out into the future, and there are more climate models out there that are predicting what's going to happen months out into the future. But just like any model, when you're trying to predict what's going to happen that far out, you're going to get different results. And that's what we see when we look at the individual models that are predicting months out. You see different results, which gives us little confidence in what's going to happen months out into the future.
Isn't it nice there are men like Wolf who decide to make their careers as government meteorologists? It's not tornado chasing. It's day after day of looking at the data, analyzing the models, and making the call. I suppose there can be boring days, but then you heard what Wolf said. Eastern Washington has just the kind of diverse weather he was looking for. Good for us, huh? That's it for episode 25 of Weed All About It, or what I'm calling The Other Weatherman, about my conversation with meteorologist Jeremy Wolf. I hope you enjoyed the show and plan on joining me again for another episode of Weed All About It.
Don't like chemicals, don't like killing. Look in your kitchen, the story there's chilling. Plant food, Windex, mouse bait too. Mr. Clean, easy off, even pet shampoo. You wanna be a hypocrite? Just forget to have the shit. We feed you.